Hello and welcome to this week's Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, as always, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio today,
a very congested Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon.
I'm having deja vu.
and a very tired, but somewhat energized. Fatigue does that to you. Joe Manis.
I just want to point out this is the second time we've done this intro because some rando called us asking for the flower shop a few minutes ago. That's why we're giggling right now.
Extra humor here.
Take two. But Joe, you're exhausted because you've been in Jefferson City.
Yes, since Monday, and I just got back late Thursday night. I have a lot of respect for the Capitol press corps because the last few weeks of session every year, you earn your money.
This is where you earn your comp time.
Yes, you borrowed the phrase there, but
for myself.
Yes, and I really gained a lot of additional respect that I already had for Marshall Griffin who works for a number of public radio stations around the state, who told me he'd been getting only about 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night because he was having to cover all this stuff and then do all these radio broadcasts. Yeah. So the big thing is this unexpected windfall of money, which for most of the legislators, because of term limits, they have never seen this. Yeah. Because since 2008, for about 2 years, the Missouri bottom line, as far as the state government concerned, was going down, down, down.
It's just been a lot of cutting, although in 2009 there was like this stimulus money that was being divvied out. But in recent years, it's just been cut, cut, cut.
No, but even with the $4 billion in stimulus that Missouri got that they spread out over 3 years, the governor still had to cut at least $1.5 billion from the various budgets. Mm-hmm. So that's how bad it was. All of a sudden, and different people have different interpretations, the fortunes have started to turn around. Last year was a little better. This year, though, in the last few months, things have started to go gangbusters. So the April numbers came out early Thursday, which showed that the state growth for the month was up 27% from the April of 2012. And the April of 2012 had been better than earlier. But more importantly, the year-to-date totals, this is for the fiscal year that ends June 30th, it's now running almost 12% above the year before. And they had budgeted, even with the revised budget, it was less than 5% increase they were estimating. So right now, it looks like the state has above what was budgeted. If nothing else, you know, assuming things stay constant, they're going to have at least an extra $300 or $400 million in just the current year budget, money that they hadn't expected.
So what do we do with it?
Well, that's the question. Now, on Monday, and this shows how things can change so quickly. On Monday, the speaker, Tim Jones, who's from suburban St. Louis, had a news conference on various issues. And among other things, he was saying that He was venting at the Senate because the state Senate, while they made a whole bunch of cuts in some programs, including motor vehicles, which is a side issue, but the bottom line is the overall Senate budget was a few million, just like $3 or $4 million above the House. But he claimed that the Senate was banking on this extra largesse. Now, this is Monday before the latest results came out. Okay, and that the House budget that they had passed was just a few hundred thousand under the revenue estimate. See, there's something called the consensus revenue estimate that all three parties, the governor, the House, and the Senate, they all agree on late in the year, a couple months before the session begins in January. And they all agree that, okay, we're agreeing that the budget's going to show a 2% increase or 5% increase or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that there isn't fighting over... They don't spend 5 months fighting over what the increase is going to be. So the staff and the principals all get this worked out. Well, Jones was claiming that the Senate was assuming that this extra money coming in was going to continue. Okay, fast forward to Thursday. State Budget Office puts out figures showing what I just said. 27% increase. It looks like at least $400 million more this year. Within minutes, so obviously there had been some discussion between the budget office and the governors, the governor puts out an announcement saying he is going to file an amendment on Thursday asking that the next budget have at least an extra $86 million in it for one-time capital improvements. His point is, let's bank the rest, but we'll to see what's going to happen, but let's do this one-time capital improvements. So that included in his proposal about $28 million to upgrade the state capitol, which has a leaky roof and some other problems, and it's a fabulous building.
But it needs some work.
It needs some work. But and then also $45 million to improve the state parks, and then about $13 million to build a new state hospital in Fulton, which is for people with is targeted towards the mentally ill. Yeah. So that's the guts of it. All right. So an hour and a half later, the speaker shows up in the press gallery. And it says that there has been a deal cut, Senate, House, and the governor's office, and they're going to, and that Rick Stream, the budget chief, who's also from Kirkwood, will be introducing within minutes a amendment for capital improvements, but it's going to be $121 million.
Wow.
So the Republicans have upped the ante. Why? $38 million is to buy this building that's right next to the Capitol that now houses the Department of Transportation. Right. The Department of Transportation is, because it's outgrown its quarters or whatever, wanted to move to another old building, the old prison site in Jefferson City.
Historic.
Yes. So the basically, the legislature wants to buy that building and move a bunch of staff over there, plus some other state employees that are housed in the Capitol, because the Capitol, for all its glory, they do have tight quarters.
Right.
And so he said they had agreed, so $38 million for that, $50 million to improve the Capitol. And the question was, is that to help improve the legislators' offices? Or there's some suspicion about that. The parks proposal was cut by more than half to $20 million. But again, there was also the Fulton Hospital in there. Now, a key subplot to that, the Fulton Hospital improvements has been a pet project of Kurt Schaefer, the state senator from Columbia, who's been leading one of the charges on the whole concealed carry permit fight, but also is head of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate. So the plot thickens. So now it's got something in that Schaefer would want. Okay, so Stream introduces this on the floor right after lunchtime within minutes. It's approved by the House overwhelmingly, and so it moves on. And everybody's happy, and Jones was saying great things about the governor. And this is just a few days after they were saying that he broke the law over concealed carry permits. It's amazing what a few extra $100 million will do to people's
it does
point of view.
Hey, for a few extra $100 million, I could change my tune.
It does seem like a different flavor than the last few years, when it's just been these agonizing negotiations over what to cut and what to keep. And now that they have this extra money, you know, it just does seem like a change in mentality.
But it also could change the fortunes for SB 26, which is this bill that I had been told off the record by some lobbyists the day before was probably dead, which is this proposal to cut corporate taxes in half, reduce individual income taxes, and also increase the state sales tax. There had been controversy over whether all sides agree it would cost the state's bottom line. The issue, if it's between $200 million and $900 million, the governor's against it. Now, there's also an alternate bill, though, that's being crafted over in the Senate that doesn't include the sales tax thing, just has some of the corporate tax cuts. That may revive. And, in fact, Jones made some comment during the news conference when I asked him about this, that, you know, he believed that some of the improved fortunes was because of the phase out of the state corporate franchise tax, which was started several years ago and which has been being phased out. And that when it's all phased out, does cost the state, if I recall, it's about 90 don't hold me to this, but I think it's about $90 million a year when it's totally phased out. Mm. In the meantime, I did talk to the state budget chief, Linda Lubering, and she is the one with the word of caution. She says that, A, while the April numbers look good, she thinks a lot of it is because the stock market is back up. So some people whose stock was underwater, so if they sold it, they didn't owe anything, they could take losses, were now having to pay capital gains. And, of course, April was the month right. when income taxes reduced. So they think that some of this was people having to pay on their capital gains of the last year because the stock market's been going gangbusters. So she was cautioning that this picture may not continue to be so great in a few months. So obviously she's not taking stances on legislation, but she is the budget division chief and in effect part of the Nixon administration. And Nixon has been taking a dim view of these tax cuts, saying Missouri already is right. one of the lowest tax states in mm-hmm. the country. So there's this whole backdrop, and the last 2 weeks will be interesting.
Well, let's talk about some other sorts of spending going on.
Yes.
But, Joe, there's a lot of – the budget gets a lot of press, but you wrote about something that hasn't been getting a lot of press, the alcohol spending. Talk a little, explain this.
I'll be real
issue.
Brief. I know because Jason's like rolling his hands.
I'm an impatient man.
Well, it's good. It's good. I want to give a shout out to the Missouri Times, a small new publication in Jefferson City that just focuses on stuff that happens in the state capitol. And they did an exhaustive piece on this a couple weeks ago. It was extremely technical. It was more technical than I was going to write about, but this is something.
Seems like a technical issue.
But this is the thing. Okay, basically the bottom line is the courts the last year and a half have ruled that the state's laws governing franchises for alcohol distributors and suppliers and retailers, that it changed the definition. So the result is it changed the relationship. And so it makes it more difficult, according to some, to have these exclusive arrangements. Okay, but the details are kind of a side issue. What's the main point for our listeners is that in Jefferson City, while there's officially all this talk about the budget, various tax cut proposals, all this other stuff, virtually every lobbyist in the state capitol also has been hired to represent one side or the other in this alcohol fight, which pits two major distributors. One of them is St. Louis-based Major Brands, and the other one is Glazers of Missouri, which is based in Texas but has an operation here in the state. So these two distributors are in this dueling match over this over these bills to basically restore the old definition. Major Brands is for it. Glazers is against it. The mayor, Francis Slay, unbeknownst to anybody until I got there on Monday and started asking around, I found out that the mayor had been coming to Jefferson City regularly to lobby on behalf of Major Brands. In fact, his campaign consultant, Richard Callow, Major Brands is one of his clients. Former State House Speaker Steve Tilley also is Jefferson City on behalf of Major Brands. Former Senate President Pro Tem Mike Gibbons, a lawyer based in Kirkwood, also is in Jeff City on behalf of Major Brands. There's a bunch of other people who are based in for Glazers, including former state rep Steve Carroll and Rodney Hubbard. So there's all of these. That's just a sampling. We're talking about two dozen lobbyists, and they're all making tons of money because all these alcohol both sides are pouring all this money for lobbyists to persuade the legislators to either vote for the bill or not for the bill. Glazers just started running TV and radio ads the last couple days, including radio ads in the St. Louis area against these bills. So my point is, what the bills are about is really kind of a subplot. Yeah. The show is about all this money being spent to hire lobbyists to influence the legislators to vote one way or the other. And right now the bills are, the word is that the bills may be stuck, but I'm also hearing that the provisions may be tacked on as an amendment onto something. So the drama continues. And while everybody's talking about this other stuff, the alcohol wars, as people have called it, is a big, very expensive sideshow, and all the lobbyists admit to be very happy about it because they say everyone's making lots of money off of it.
Yeah.
The alcohol wars sounds like a early 1900s gangsters.
It seems like this is brewing a lot of money. One thing, it's kind of on the Jefferson City note, one bill that I've been paying attention that doesn't have to do with, you know, franchises is this bill that passed the House and is awaiting action in the Senate to basically obliterate St. Louis County and St. Louis City's foreclosure mediation ordinances. And the reasons behind those, I've written a lot about them. You can go to stlbeacon.org to do it. And I think there's a real chance of this bill passing because the Missouri Bankers Association sees it as a big priority. It passed the House even with a bunch of Democratic votes.
Now, why do they see it as a priority?
They feel that foreclosure mediation it costs them money. Mm-hmm. It causes more time to pass before houses go between owners, which they see as detrimental. Realtors don't like that because they see it as disturbing the real estate market. But proponents of it see as a way of slowing the process down and giving people a chance to meet with their lenders and servicers in case there's any mistakes.
And keep their homes.
And potentially keep
their
homes.
Yeah, potentially. Right.
In many cases, it won't. And the reason this has really fascinated me is it is a starkly different policy than what the state has done. And there have been efforts to take foreclosure mediation statewide. They have failed miserably. And, you know, I am going to be interested to see what happens. There are, I think, at least four state senators that I've talked to, maybe more. Maria Chappelle Nadal, Jamila Nasheed, Joe Kevney, and Gina Walsh, and there may be more, who have said that they opposed this. I feel that—
Oppose the bill or oppose the
oppose
mediation?
Oppose the bill.
Okay.
Wiping out foreclosure mediation.
Okay.
And I think the whether it passes or not is going to depend on whether those senators are willing to filibuster it. And because if they just get up and talk and, you know, decide not to block the bill, I think it will pass, and it will pass with a pretty large majority. And even if the governor vetoes it, I think it could stand a real chance of being overridden. And I don't think it really is getting a whole lot of attention. I think, kind of to pair with your point, the Missouri Times is one of the other people that have written about it. I know that the Post-Dispatch wrote an editorial about it this week. And, you know, it is a fascinating struggle, I think, between, you know, counties, charter counties that kind of want to pursue their own policy and, you know, the state that kind of wants to clamp down on that. Because some powerful interest groups are saying it would be detrimental to their interests. So I don't know whether that's going to be debated by the time I'm in Jefferson City next week, but it's going to be something that I'm going to be following as the legislature goes on.
Yeah, and before we leave Jeff City, just real quick, I do want to mention that besides the budget pending, the mediation thing is actually part of a number of business-related bills on various issues from the Second Injury Fund to workers' comp to the taxes that are either going to be in conference or other things are still haggling some stuff out. So there's a lot of business-related issues out there. I just wanted to mention that, and this is one of them.
Well, let's bring it all back home, or at least to a suburb of home.
We're going to talk now about the land of enchantment.
The land?
Ellisville, Missouri. And
a quaint old town.
I don't know how much we've talked about this on the show, but
I don't think we have.
Yeah, I started covering it a few weeks. I mean, about a month ago, and then Jason took over when I left for Paris.
You can tell by the fact that I'm calling it a name that it is full of mirth and wonder.
Okay. Now give people the details.
I'll give people the details. The former mayor Adam Paul basically did a bunch of stuff that angered the other council members.
While he was mayor.
While he was mayor.
And so the previous council tossed him out. They impeached him.
He's saying all the reasons he was impeached were frivolous and there was a conspiracy against him.
And he's gone to court to get his job
back. And he's gone to court to get it overturned. So one of the interesting things was they took this vote on impeachment under the old city council.
Correct.
And an election happened and two of Paul's allies were elected. When you add that.
And two were defeated. Two of his opponents were defeated.
Yeah.
Right.
So basically, there's now a possibility that if they brought it up again, it could possibly get overturned. There's a swing vote.
Correct.
I think her name is Cindy Poole.
Yes.
And I may be saying her name wrong. I talked with her after the meeting. She says she's undecided on it. She wants to see everything before making a decision.
And one of the people on the council, still on the council, is Matt Perillo, who's a former mayor.
Yeah.
And who was among those who voted to impeach Paul.
Yeah. So the reason I bring that backdrop up, there was an attempt to bring this up last Wednesday.
Correct.
I guess that was 2 days ago. And it was not put on the agenda because the city manager called John Maupin, who's an attorney that's been brought in by the town, and he said that the motion that was made was crafted incorrectly, and it caused just a firestorm of criticism. You had Chet Pleben, who's a well-known attorney, getting into basically a back and forth with Perillo. You had
now Pleben's representing Paul.
Yeah, representing Paul. You had angry townspeople hurling profanity at people. You had Perillo having to deal with all of these Paul supporters after the meeting. I mean, I go back and forth on this. On the one hand, Ellisville is a 9,000-person town in St. Louis County, one out of 90. If it ceased to exist tomorrow, I don't think that it would be – I think life would go on,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Its trials and tribulations are pale in comparison to some of the things that are going on in St. Louis City or elsewhere. But on the other hand, it is such a captivating and mesmerizing experience for people that watch it. And the issues about, you know, whether you put a Walmart there or not. I mean, it just kind of the saga that keeps on going. And I know that you've been kind of in that situation, too, watching it. And I'm sure, I don't know if you come to the same conclusion, but.
Well, I mean, I'm not taking sides on it, but what it does.
And neither am I.
And what it does, in one of my early stories, I talked about this. The whole situation in Ellisville, though, does reflect the pressures that all these municipalities in St. Louis County are under, because now St. Louis County has over 90 municipalities, to get their share of tax revenue. The bottom line is they're all vying to get these big box stores within their borders. I'm overly simplifying it, but that's the bottom line. Ellisville lost a couple big box stores, and they've been dying to get this Walmart because they think it will help bring in tax revenue because they need it to operate their government and provide services
yes.
for their
and
community.
Perillo made that point abundantly clear afterwards.
And see, Paul had been elected in part because he had opposed the tax breaks that were being proposed to attract Walmart.
Yes.
So that's the bottom. So while the issue of should they or should they not provide tax incentives to Walmart, it's really the broader case because all of these communities many of them have felt that they have had to provide tax incentives for various
big box things in order to get more tax revenue. This broader issue, I think, is getting increasingly lost in this like melodrama that continues between you know Paul and his supporters and the Perillo and the other people that wanted to throw him out. And you know, somebody basically said that there has to be some conclusion on this, and that if they keep going to where they're going to be sniping at each other, city business is not going to get done as quickly as possible. The legal costs are just going to keep going up for the city. I mean, because the city has had to defend and go through this process, it's cost tens of thousands of dollars. Now, I've heard the argument before that the Perillo and some of the anti-Paul people are saying is if Paul didn't break parts of the charter, then there wouldn't have been impeached and he wouldn't have to go through all of these legal situations.
But, and this is ending up now with the judge having, I mean, in effect, the courts are going to decide this.
So that is the counter argument, but it kind of goes back to what I was saying before. This situation is just, you know, so wacky and has so much tension and emotion to it that, you know, until there is a conclusion, it's still going to garner public attention, and it's still going to garner a lot of media attention. So the ball is in your court, Ellisville. If you want to continue on this path, we're going to keep watching it.
Well, and Jason has now proposed there are new signs for going in Ellisville. Ellisville, the land of enchantment.
The land
actually,
of enchantment.
Actually, that's kind of nice.
I think that would do very well for them to compete with the mighty Baldwins and Chesterfields of the world. And I'm biased. My dad grew up in Chesterfield. I heard that they just got Monsanto to expand there.
That's true.
I think that Chesterfield will become the biggest municipality in St. Louis County in 5 years.
Yes.
So.
Well, we will be back next week where we'll be devoting an
I don't
our
know
entire
why I just,
half hour.
I don't know why I just said that. That was a totally random statement.
That's all right. It's okay.
Next week, we'll be devoting our entire half hour to the Ellisville
Land
debate,
of Enchantment.
The Land of Enchantment.
Probably
debate.
Not. I think that's enough for okay. one century.
Okay.
Well, we'll find out next week. You can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. You can follow Jason on Twitter at
J. Rosenbaum.
And you can follow Joe on Twitter.
And J. Manis. That's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
You can read all of Marshall and I's stories at stlpublicradio.org. You can read all of Joe and Jason's stories at stlbeacon.org. We'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
So long from the land of enchantment.
Oh.